I'm going to ask Susan to put up a slide of a book that just crossed my path, and it's so fortuitous. I know that Terry never believes this, but things just happened to me. I had been thinking about this presentation and the burning bowl, and it began to dawn on me that aspects of our consciousness really are the first, are the front line, maybe, let's say. Aspects of our consciousness lead us to activities like the burning bowl, and that perhaps we should be focusing a little more attention on the consciousness that precedes it. Then I saw this book 3 days before I was supposed to do this about a new manual of affirmative prayer by Linda Martella Whitsett and Deanne Weir Morency. And it really is so revolutionary to me because it's not anything that we don't know as Unity students, but they've really kind of updated the way that we think about words and how we use them. And it just clicked right into place that this is the beginning and basis of my talk for the burning bowl. So, of course, you all agree, right? I had to order it immediately.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So, well, I thought about that. Had I had a little more cash flowing through my fingers, I would have gotten copies for everybody and pressed them into your hands and said, you have to read this book. So I'll say that to you, but you'll have to get your own copy. Okay. So I'm going to combine talking about the burning bowl and the practice of affirmative prayer. And while we have this picture up here of the cover, I want to point out that the model that the two authors have developed is that of a fern, a frond, I guess you would call it, that it blossoms right over there where the little pink curlicue starts as a little seed, and then it starts to blossom around, and as it curls around itself, it goes out in some different directions. And they have that image because they've taken the Unity model of 5 steps of affirmative prayer, and they've made it their own in some ways. And instead of steps, they've called them movements, because they say it's kind of like Russian dolls nested inside each other. And even though I'm going to be giving a worksheet to you a little bit later that has the steps in order, they say that they really move and flow with each other, so they call them movements. So that's the book, and that's the picture. The picture is beautiful enough to even sell you the book without even reading it. So anyway. In doing the burning bowl, I think that we often focus our attention on what it is that we're going to burn. And I was trying to count up the years. I think this is at least my 30. Susan, when did you start to come to this church? 97, really? Okay, we started to come in 93, and I thought Susan was already here. Well, dang.
She was born in the church.
Well, so anyway, I figured that Terry and I have about 34 years of burning bowls under our belt, and I thought maybe Susan had me beat, but I guess not, especially counting a couple years when I was in Columbus, Ohio. So there might be a couple people around here, Joanne maybe, there's a couple people that are neck and neck with us. But anyway, it struck me that when I first started to participate in the Burning Bowl in Columbus, Ohio, I was so gung-ho. I mean, I was gung-ho about everything. And I was going to get rid of this, I was going to get rid of that, and I was going to burn that and this. And this was before we had flash paper, so we just had typing paper. We could write all we wanted. And I wrote reams and reams of stuff I was going to get rid of. And it's just like, I think I thought, okay, I'd go through the ceremony, and it would be, you know, one and done, and that would be it for that, you know? Little did I recognize that it really has become a process over the many years. But I think that whole one and done thing was kind of in keeping with my type A personality that I used to have, which thankfully I've grown out of. So, yeah, right, I heard that back there. So I realized that at first when I thought about doing this presentation, I thought I would just have people kind of like burn the aspects of consciousness that got in their way, in our way of making change. And then I thought, that's too much of a change because we do burn things we wish to release. So we're going to think on two levels today. I don't want to forget to tell you this, especially for people who are at home. I was watching Unity of the Lakeshore, I think it was. I think it might be Chicago. If Sandy was here, she would know. But instead of a burning bowl, they had what they called a holy moly shredder. And they really did. And people were having great fun with it. They'd come up, they'd put their stuff in the shredder. They had big smiles on their face. So if any of you who are joining this at home, if you don't want to burn a candle or whatever, you might have a shredder at hand and it can serve the same purpose. So watching that same presentation, the minister there said, you know, that any first grader can know what made them sad, what hurt, what caused them pain, and what they don't want to do again. That's the easy part. We probably all have that list. We know what we don't want to do again. We know what we'd like to burn, we'd like to release. That's the part that is the most obvious. Oh, by the way, if I say ritual, the burning bowl ritual, because sometimes I think of it in that way, let's not get all woo-woo about that word ritual. In the dictionary, a ritual is defined as a set of words or actions performed in a regular way, often as a part of a religious ceremony. So this is a ritual. Weddings are rituals. Funerals are rituals. Graduation. So this is a ceremony, a progression of events that we participate in on a regular basis. So I want to, was thinking about the actual image of a bowl, and it struck me that we could think of the bowl as our consciousness. Our consciousness holds the both helpful and non-helpful, the old, the new, the revolutionary. It holds our ideas, our thoughts, and it's the place where we can keep those things. But I thought also about cleaning out that dreaded junk drawer in the kitchen. And Terry and I, I saw someone back there cringe. Terry and I have been doing some of that. And the way that I like to do it is I just empty everything into a big cardboard box. I take it into the living room by a comfortable chair and I sort out keep, throw away, keep, throw away. And so it struck me that we have, if we think about our consciousness being a bowl, we have junk in there that we don't need anymore, and we have some things that we want to keep. And so the thing about cleaning out the junk drawer, have you noticed that you do it and pretty soon you have to do it again? It never stays cleaned out forever and ever. So this is the way of us cleaning out our junk drawer. So we empty out our bowl onto the kitchen counter, we sort our piles, we put what we want to get rid of in the bowl and burn it. Now don't worry, the things we want to keep are still sitting there on the counter to put back in, but after we burn those things up, we wash the bowl, we put the things we want to keep back in there, and we're ready to go until the next time. You know, and I had an idea about 2 o'clock this morning when I was thinking about this, that it would be fun to even make a symbolic little burning bowl. You wouldn't burn in it, but it could be a little bowl on your bedside table or on your kitchen counter where every day or every once in a while you wrote significant things for the better or the worse, and you just put them in there. You know, and at some point you wouldn't necessarily burn it if it was Tupperware, but you could shred it, you could get rid of it, and it would keep it in your mind that this is a process. Okay. One of the things that the authors of this book talk about is that it is great and fine to touch that ultimate truth, that great truth of God. But we also have to live in the world. And maybe we go through that process and 2 minutes later or 2 days later, all that stuff's back. And we're like, well, dang. So they say that it's important for us to have some behaviors, some actions, some tangible things to hook onto what we've released. Because they say it can be hard to assess this growth directly, you know. When am I touching into my ultimate self? How well am I doing it? And I have to say that actually I used to think I wasn't doing it very well. But I came up because I heard about touching into that ground of God, that ultimate spirit, that great truth that underlies all of life. And I thought, well, I don't think I'm doing that. You know, everybody else must be doing it, but I don't think I'm doing it. And then I got another really cool image. Let's say that you're going to bake some gingerbread cookies. In my day, it was gingerbread boys, but now it's a multi-gender opportunity. So you get out all the ingredients. You get the butter, the flour, the sugar, everything on the counter. You mix up the dough. You roll the dough out, and you cut them out. You put them in the oven and bake them. Now, when you get them out of the oven, you can't see nor pull out the eggs that you put in there, or the flour, or the sugar, because that whole baking process has turned that dough into something completely different. Kind of like, you know, in the Middle Ages when they were searching for an alchemical process that would turn lead into gold or whatever. And so I started thinking about that because some of the teachers I follow on the internet talk about us having a spiritual DNA. And they don't define that in depth, but in me thinking about that, I'm thinking about that is, it's our yearning to know more. It's our yearning to see beyond the material aspects of the world, to know about things and touch into things that are of spirit. So that's kind of my working definition of spiritual DNA. So now, let's think about people DNA. And I have to have a MASH reference in a lot of my talks. There's a episode in which Henry Blake is supposed to be giving the sex talk to the troops. And of course, Hawkeye and BJ are back in the back laughing and joking and punching each other. And Henry gets so rattled by that he just drops off with the talk and doesn't do it. So now when I'm going to talk about the human DNA talk, that's not where we're going, okay? So just be calm. But when two people form another little being, the DNA from both people go together to make a new person. And as that baby gets older, and maybe you can tell already, Colleen, I don't know, but babies don't be that distinctive to me in their appearance to say that, oh, she's got her mother's hair. She's got her father's eyes. You know, she's got her grandfather's smile. As we grow, we can see those aspects. But even so, we can't go back in and see what DNA contributed to what. Maybe she does have her mother's hair, but her father's hair genes might have influenced that some. So we can't pull that apart. So I thought, just like the gingerbread cookie that got baked, we are here on planet Earth, and we have two sets of DNA. We have the DNA that came from us being, you know, human beings on a planet of carbon-based life, and that DNA goes back tens of thousands of years, if you really want to trace it back that far. And we have spiritual DNA. But when we're baked, now, half-baked or really baked, we're all baked. I've decided that to try to separate out what is quote-unquote spiritual and what is quote-unquote human is the wrong way to go. I'm a baked product, as are all of you, and we're baked differently. Maybe different environments, different opportunities, different places we've lived, different education we have or hadn't had. Many things make us somewhat different, but we are all baked of the ingredients that came off of the same shelf in one way or another. So I've decided to be a little easier on myself, that if I don't every single time hit that ultimate awareness and joyousness of the Spirit of God, which underlies all of creation, that I can be pleased with myself, happy with myself, that I'm on the journey and that I'm working on it. And how I do it is okay. And how you all do it is okay. I'm kind of going around in here. Okay. I think right now we'll go. Terry said I should say his name right nicely and loud to get his attention. Terry has a couple of worksheets that I want to give to you. I made two for each of you because there's a lot of good information on them. And there's one I want you to look at for how you might do this burning bowl process today. And one that you might take home as a reference. And if you decide you don't need to, you just drop one back off on the back table and that'll be fine too. I'm not going to go through all of this with you. I just want to point out a couple things as we start to get ready for Chrissy's meditation. The authors talk about five movements, and that's that spreading out of the frond, the fern frond. And in the beginning of affirmative prayer, or in the beginning of this movement, I open my mind to seeing something new. I open my mind to, God forbid, I might not always be right. Do you hear that, Terry? I might not always be right. I open my mind to hearing some other version of what the story may be. And one of the things they suggest that you could say to yourself, I'm going to relax the story I've been telling myself about blank. There's many ways you could open. That's just one thought. Skipping down to movement two, I recognize that God is blank. And this would be just one word, a principle. Let's go back up and say that you decide to release something about your family relationships. And so you recognize that a spirit, a quality of God would be harmony or peace or love. So we don't say something so overreaching that doesn't mean anything to us. We look at one quality that would fit the situation that we want to release. So you might say, if situation one was about the family, you might say, I recognize that God is harmony. And that gives you something to latch onto. But now, number three, we claim that divine principle for ourselves. It's fine for God to be harmony, but what about us? And so we can say something like, I joyfully claim my divine identity of harmony. And then in step four, this is the place where we say, we realize that we can do something, we have something, we know something. Because in the first three steps, we've opened up a space for possibility. We've recognized the needed spiritual principle and integrated this divine principle with our own divine identity. Now we step into what's possible. And this is where we become tangible. I realize that I can approach my family member with different language. I realize I can change my thoughts away from attacking in my mind to loving them. Or what can I do? What can I lay hold of that would extend that harmony? And then lastly is appreciation. And the authors say that appreciation and gratitude can be exchangeable words, interchangeable, but are slightly different. Because gratitude often implies some thankfulness to an outside source, where appreciation is more than a turn of phrase, it's a state of being itself evident in biochemistry and invisible vibration. And that is true. That's been measured, how these people measure these things in labs, that when we're dwelling in states of appreciation, we do change our body. So this is a fast go-through, and originally I thought that we would go through and you would pick an area and write in it, but that's too lengthy for this second. What I want you to do is just hold this thought while Chrissy leads you through the meditation to prepare for the burning bowl, And then you do have, as Chrissy will explain, little papers to write on. Oh, by the way, the authors say, you don't have to write the whole story. What a relief. God knows, and you know. You don't have to write, he said, she said, then we did. Just write down, if I want to let Chrissy off the hook, I just say, Chrissy. God knows the rest, okay? We don't have to do the whole story. So that's why these little papers can work just as well as these big ones. So I'm going to turn it over to Chrissy. Like I said, there's a lot of good information on here that you could read and absorb at home if you wanted to. That's why I wanted you to have an extra copy. So I'm going to gather up all my things now, Chrissy, and get out of your way.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.